Welcome everyone to
To
Duplica Report Podcast. I am John Bifulky, Research Manager at Special Eurasia, and today we have with us a guest, Matthias Basinger. He is the founder of and editor-in-chief for the Defense Horizon Journal, and he holds a Magister in Military Leadership at the Theresa Military Academy, a Master's degree in Operational Studies at the USA Army Command General Staff College, and a PhD in Interdisciplinary Studies at the University of Vienna. Hi, Matthias.
Hi, Giuliano. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure to have you, and with you today we want to discuss some specific issues regarding, you know, geopolitics and the military war, the intelligence studies. So my first question is, how can your military experience combine with geopolitical consulting and intelligence analysis?
Thank you very much for this question. If you allow, I just would like to start with a disclaimer. Everything I'm sharing today with you is my academic assessment. I'm not speaking or representing the official views of the Austrian Armed Forces or the Republic of Austria. Neither do they reflect NATO's official stance on issues. As a voluntary national contribution, I'm not entitled to speak on behalf of the alliance. Having said that, well, military education on all levels of command gives us tools, procedures, processes to assess in a very analytical way, leaving out emotions, situations, tasks, and problems. And exactly these processes are perfect tools for geopolitical assessments and analysis too. The military decision-making process on the tactical level, on the operational level, and on the strategic level focuses with distinct steps on problem solving. And the higher the education, the higher the echelon the process is designed for, the more comprehensive the understanding becomes. So just talking now about the strategic level, that's already a quite comprehensive assessment of the situation one has to generate, even on the military strategic or strategic level. For those who want to have a little bit more insights into that, the so-called Petraeus Doctrine, JP324, I'm well aware that's on counterinsurgency. Nevertheless, it shows perfect tools that are later on as well reflected in NATO's COPD, the Comprehensive Operational Planning Directive, with system of system analysis, factor analysis, risk and mitigation. So all these tools that derive from military education are exactly the tools we need for geopolitical analysis, since we should look in geopolitics at the things as they are rather than as they're supposed to be. So it makes no sense doing geopolitical analysis when describing or thinking of the world how it's supposed to be from an altruistic point of view. We have to have a sober assessment of the situation to come to logic conclusions. And this is why military education perfectly falls in line with geopolitics.
Thanks for your answer. And talking about the military sector, what are the current main trends related to weapons and intelligence collection?
Well, I would answer this excellent question in two ways. I start with the intelligence. We see that digitalization and automation are not only more anymore a trend, they are a reality. The internet itself became, or was once upon a time, in fact, a beautiful tool for democratization of knowledge. Everybody could read everything. It was not anymore a need for people to go to libraries and read trillions of books to get a certain understanding. With the internet, everybody could kind of get into the common knowledge and see the world even through the eyes of people in different countries far, far away to grab their knowledge. That was a beautiful thing. We see in contemporary times and contemporary challenges that there's a certain shift when it comes to that. We see that this free accessibility of information and intelligence, open source intelligence, can be used by antagonist powers as a tool to affect our societies, our decision makers, with disinformation, with fake news, with the exploitation of mis and malinformation. So all those things are kind of from huge benefit. It was once upon a time, they became kind of means against our societies and our values. When we look now at the trends, well, there was a certain democratization as well when it comes to artificial intelligence. Five, 6 years ago, it was a thing limited to huge worldwide global corporates or governments to do to create or to exploit artificial intelligence nowadays with ChatGPT and things like that. Everybody can create deep fake and fake news back home just by Googleizing, finding a software, downloading it. So this is kind of that's a huge threat in there. And when it comes now for the trends in intelligence, on the one hand side, we have to be aware of this democratization and the exploitation of these means by antagonist powers on the one hand side. And on the other hand side, we have to make best use still out of these tools of artificial intelligence to have in this infinite field of data out there to get the right information out of that and create intelligence we can ultimately exploit on the battlefield or on the strategic level with other instruments of power. I just teased that topic and I don't want to deviate from the topic itself, but just to have that mentioned, we see that there's an information war ongoing. There's a war ongoing, and with Russia's most recent invasion into Ukraine, all European, all Western states are targets of these disinformation campaigns. So we see there's a war ongoing and the military is not anymore the primary means for that war. This is something really remarkable, and we have to take our conclusions out of that, and conclusions has to be education and awareness raising. This is one side of the answer I would give to this question. On the other hand side, when it comes to the military, there's lots of buzzwords out there that we're living in the century of the drones, and it's drone wars are ongoing out there. I would counter that. I don't share that view, because the most conventional parts of the wars, they are still ongoing and they're still the key pillars. Without air defense systems, without tanks, armored vehicles, there is no warfare. I'm not trying to marginalize the role of UAVs. UAVs are still a crucial part in there. It's just an add-on. It didn't replace anything. And this is sometimes a misunderstanding when it comes to observations, deductions, and conclusions from the ongoing campaign, Russian campaign in Ukraine. And we say like, no, tanks are not that important anymore. They are vital to the campaign. And we see that a war of attrition is ongoing, which means that there's not anymore just a focus on quality as Western militaries did it, replacing quantity by quality. It doesn't work anymore. We need both. We need the quantity and the quality. There has to be the quantity behind the quality that we can substitute, replace the losses on the battlefield. So what does that mean at the end of the day? For network-centric operations, that should not be ultimately network-centric, but centralized. That should be network-centric and decentralized. We need artificial intelligence in the military to command and control, to support our command and control efforts for coordination reasons. We need artificial intelligence for that. And we have to start living up to one of our credos in Western militaries. We always claim that one of the key pillars of our doctrines is mission command, and mission command entails several things. One of them is mutual trust. Another one is a delegation of authority. A third one, for example, is that I accept failures. I accept that when I delegate authority to take decisions, things are not ultimately done exactly the way I want to have it. That's a price tag I have to pay for mission command. And when we want to integrate artificial intelligence in the military together with intelligence gathering in the most efficient way, we have to include artificial intelligence and give trust to it and accept that things are ultimately not done the way we would have done it as human decision takers. However, and this is the end of my response to the second part, is the responsibility is still with human beings. We cannot shift responsibility to artificial intelligence. That would be too cheap. So we're not in times like Deus vult, it was God's will that we do something, towards Imperator vult, it's the head of state who ordered us to do that, ultimately now to Machina vult, the machine did it. No, it's still human responsibility. So artificial intelligence, digitalization, automatization, those are ongoing things, ongoing trends, developments that will overtake all the other things as well. Conventional war stays conventional war. There's just add-ons.
Thanks for your answer. It was really interesting. You mentioned, of course, the conflict in Ukraine, and this is my personal question about your experience also, how this conflict impacted or changed NATO strategies and NATO also, program attitude toward Russia, but also the entire conflict and the military doctrine.
Mm-hmm. So we know from official NATO homepages that cooperative security partnerships, in fact, are one of the key pillars of the alliance. And I'm now just thinking that through. What did this most recent invasion into Ukraine mean for partners? They saw that a NATO partner was invaded, attacked, and they saw that although the alliance does substantial support to this country, together with the European Union, both on the alliance level and on a bilateral level, partners see that ultimately it is Ukraine still fighting its war, because the alliance indeed doesn't want to be dragged into this conflict, into this war. I mean, ultimately, everybody wants to avoid a world war, which is understandable and good. I think all of us should be happy about that. But what partners saw there is a partnership with NATO does not automatically mean that the alliance will jump in once you're attacked. And that raises several follow-on questions for partners. How close they should align most likely, and make kind of an assessment as well about risk and mitigation. What does that mean if a partner exposes itself into a certain direction? I think the alliance has a lessons identified so far. On one hand side, and this is most like an internal thing, the alliance will see, or was revitalized, I would even say. It's just some years ago that the French president said it's brain dead. So I would say, obviously, it's not anymore. The Titan was awakened by something that happened there. There is obviously still a need for the alliance, and this is something that everybody took away from that. So there's more enthusiasm about defense itself, more understanding again. We see that slowly but steadily defense budgets are increasing again. The big issue remains obviously human resources, so staffing of the armed forces. That's still a big question mark out there. But we see that for the existence of the alliance itself, it's not obsolete, it's still vital for security architecture and for the security architecture even of Europe. There was once a good quotation: does the European Union have an army? Yes, it's NATO. So it's benefits for the European Union as well. And when it comes to external factors, not focusing away a bit from the alliance, but towards the partners, I think that this concept, the US, the United States, they branded it as out-partnering. The need to have more partners than your potential adversaries or antagonist powers. This is something I'm from my professional assessment and from reading lots of articles about this subject. This is something the alliance took away from that as well. That out-partnering is vital, and that we the Western society need partners all around the globe to kind of counterbalance that. And when we have a look, for example, on partnership documents that were recently obviously issued, because you find them in the internet, like partnership program with Japan. I found open source, for example, that means already the alliance tries to expand its partnerships even in these regions that are obviously not in the focal area of the Washington Treaty itself. So if it's not in the primary source for the alliance itself, it's obviously beyond that. One can say the alliance learned from that out-partnering partnerships are vital, and they're not a separate pillar with cooperative security. They contribute to the core task of deterrence. And partners, from an alliance point of view, just having a look at the longest lasting NATO operation out there, the Kosovo force, having a look just at the troop contributing nations there are lots of NATO partners in there. So for the alliance, these partnerships, they were already before, kind of like on a poker table, free chips. Somebody contributes to your game. That's crucial. And in the future scenarios, they will become even more important. So on these role models, we will see that the alliance will invest even more in its partnerships. My personal assessment, the alliance will try to do more and live up to the concept of out-partnering, having more in the boat. Because at this very moment, we see, just counting by the inhabitants, the citizens of the country supporting the Russian campaign in Ukraine, we're talking here about a global majority, unfortunately. So we have to do something to counterbalance that. And out-partnering is vital in that, and I'm pretty sure the Alliance took that as a conclusion out of this campaign.
Thanks. Last question is regarding the Defense Origin Journal. Can you tell us more about this product, what you created and established?
Thank you very much for this question. I love talking about the journal. The Defense Horizon Journal, www.tdhj.org, is an open source journal focusing on everything related to security and defense. My personal observation years ago already was that we too often think security and defense too narrow in stovepipes. There's something for the military, and then there might be something for the police forces. There's conventional war, there might be counter-terrorist operations, there might be something like counterinsurgencies, and then far, far away we have something like climate change, and then we have geopolitics, and then we have geoeconomics, and then we have usually very, especially in Europe, a Eurocentric view of the world still. We're not recognizing that we're the old world. We still think like just because we say something that's valid for everybody. And I think that's too narrow, and with some like-minded volunteers, motivated hearts out there. I founded the Defense Horizon Journal more than three years ago with the idea of spreading knowledge, exactly doing what the internet was previously or initially supposed to be, democratization of knowledge, making knowledge free accessible for people from all around the globe, allowing different perspectives on subjects. As long as authors can source and provide evidence, we allow all views on out there and just elaborate on subjects without a clustering together. So it's not like there's now a month war in Ukraine. Not at all. When visiting our homepage, you will find there's something on cognitive warfare. Then there's something on artificial intelligence. Then you can shift from the English page to the German page. You will find it behind the Austrian flag and find something about defense forces development. And then you jump on the link with the French flag and find French articles about counter-terrorist operations in Africa. And back to the English page, you will find something about Myanmar and the Rohingya. And you will find something about climate change. So all of these things are interconnected, and all of those things, the end of the day, affect, create, or endanger our security and defense. And as long as we don't understand that, as long as we don't understand, we're lacking awareness. And from my personal point of view, this is my personal opinion now, but the core task of states is to provide physical security. It's not schooling, it's not healthcare, it's not all of those other things. Those are nice things to have. But without physical security, without human security, there is no security at all. So citizens can only make their choices for elections when they understand that, when they understand who can provide me with this core task of a state. So it is a program to democratize knowledge on security and defense. It's a global program to allow authors who are eager to contribute, to provide them with a platform to publish their knowledge. We're never ever confusing limited language skills with limited knowledge. There are good ideas out there, and our objective is to support authors getting from submission to publication and have a global spread out. The Defense Horizon Journal is read in more than 120 countries already. That's great. We have more than 300 publications. We have a vast editorial team from all around the globe, motivated spirits that support our cause. We do print versions, print journals. We support conferences. The entire package, in fact, yes, is something contributing to awareness, our common goal.
Thanks for this information regarding this interesting project that we started following 2-3 years ago. So thanks again, Matthias, for being with us and for our Geopolitical Report podcast. And I hope that you can be again our guest. And thanks.
Thank you for your time and trust, Giuliano.
And I can just say that I hope that in the future we can discuss more about military doctrine, also intelligence analysis. But now, this episode, we are at the end of the episode, and I wish everyone a good evening and keep in touch. See you next time to the Geopolitical Report podcast. Bye-bye.